97.5, The Fanatic.
Hello.
All right, I need to read off the ridiculous statement of the month. The month comes to an end today. We got an extra day in February for the leap year. And this by far is going to take the cake. If you're not aware of who Duncan Robinson is, don't beat yourself up over it. He's on the Heat. He's a shooting guard. He's okay. He's not bad. But he's one of these players that the Heat have developed and drafted, as they've done for years now with guys like Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero this year. But he's in his second year. And he's having a good year. He's having a real good year. New Heat player, Andre Iguodala, our good friend, Iggy. Call him that because he hates the nickname. Said, and I quote, on Duncan Robinson, when I first got to Miami, I thought he was the ball boy or some blank. I was like, yo, this kid's shooting better than the players on the squad. Then I saw him take off his warm-ups and drain 6 threes in the game. This is where the ridiculous statement really jumps the shark. He's easily the best shooter I've ever played with. Iggy, you're trying too hard. I'll remind you, this is a guy who played with Steph and Clay. But Duncan Robinson, according to Andre Iguodala, is the best shooter he's ever played with. Once again, Iggy, you're trying too hard. Way too hard. So there's your ridiculous statement of the month. We'll see what March has in store for us. But back to the topic at hand, though, is this Sixers team. And I opened up the show talking about the parallels between these Sixers and Flyers. And really, where it starts is they both play in Philadelphia and they both play at the Wells Fargo Center. That's where the parallels stop, because their expectation level at the beginning of the season was the exact opposite. Sixers' expectation level at the beginning of the season was championship, at least Eastern Conference championship, possibly NBA championship, but a nice deep run into June. That was the expectation level. Not just from us, from players on the team. James Ennis will remind you, they're going to walk to the finals. That's one of the reasons maybe he's not on the team anymore. Just kidding, obviously. That's a stupid reason to trade somebody, and that's not the reason he's not on the team. But either way, he's not here, and they're not going to walk to the finals. You look at the Flyers, your expectation level for the Flyers was, I will be happy as a fan if they make the playoffs. I think they're close to a playoff team, but they're rebuilding, so I'm not getting my hopes up. They have a nice young core. They have a new head coach. Hey, let's see what happens. And now they're second in the Metro, and dare to dream. And you just saw the expectation levels change hands. It's a lot like if you go on the ESPN app, they have the percentage of win of the win probability for teams during a game, and you can see the mark go up for one team and then slowly go down. And that's what happened with the expectation levels for the Sixers and the Flyers. They just switched, and the Flyers went up, and the Sixers went down. And you look at what happened with the Flyers when they went out and they addressed the coaching situation. And that's what the Sixers are going to end up doing in the offseason. I cannot foresee a scenario other than all of a sudden they get their you-know-what together and they make a run where Brett Brown is back. So a new coach will be here for the 2020-2021 season. But the question is, can he win with the roster as currently constructed? And I think he can. Because as the caller, I apologize, I forget his name, but he just brought up before the break, and it's a point that I brought up yesterday on the Fanatic at 5 with Jamie Lynch, that you look at the guys who have spoken up. Al Horford spoke up about his role on this team in late December, basically unprovoked, by the way, saying, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not this bad. All of a sudden, Al Horford comes in and decides he's Steph Curry, or if you want to be Andre Iguodala, he's David Robinson. Or Duncan Robinson, I'm sorry. So, he decides to just start jacking up threes left and right. He didn't just all of a sudden decide he's an amazing three-point shooter. That's in the game plan. And he went out of his way to basically say, I'm aware of how it looks right now, but I'm not this bad. And you look at what team he came from, the Boston Celtics, who coaches that team, Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens is a pretty good coach. Josh Richardson has come out a few times this season. What team did he come from? Miami Heat. Miami Heat, who's coached by Eric Spoelstra. Eric Spoelstra's a really, really good coach. And then Glenn Robinson III, who's been here for about 12 and a half minutes, shows up and says, I have no idea what my role is. Now, whether he knows it or not, whether he had a conversation with Brett or not, whatever, this is a guy who came from Golden State Warriors, who's their coach, Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr is thought of as one of the best coaches in the NBA. The guys who are talking out about this team, about the game plan, about the coach, about communication, about leadership, these are all guys who are in their first year or less in terms of Glenn Robinson, who are in their first hour with the team. They're in their first year with the Sixers, and they come in and they immediately see there's an issue. They immediately go, "Whoa, what is going on here? We gotta change this up, because I don't know what this is." And I don't blame Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, because they don't know any better. And if they do know any better, they're getting away with whatever they want, so why would they change it? Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are not going to go into Elton Brand's office and say, "We need a new coach. I need to be yelled at more. I need to be told what to do more." They're not going to do that. Neither would you. Right? They're skating by. They're two all-stars. They're good. They're golden, pony boy. They don't need to change. It's not their problem. They like life right now. Brett lets them do what they want. They go out there. They put up nice numbers. They're not going to win a damn thing. But they like life right now. They're good. And that's the issue. The leaders on the team aren't going to go to management and demand a coaching change. Now, it's going to happen, because Elton Brand is not going to sit here and accept it for another season. I don't think, at least. I'd be shocked. And you have to remember that Elton Brand wasn't the guy that gave Brett Brown this coaching extension. That was before him. That was a 10-year well before him that decided to extend him. That was the Colangelos. And another brilliant move. Shout out to Jerry. So, and Barb, obviously. We can't forget Barb. So when you're looking at this team, I don't necessarily hold the roster construction against them. I don't hold Al Horford's poor season against them. I hold it against one guy, and that's Brett. And I'm not moving anybody until I see a new voice and a new guy coaching this team to see if they get the most out of them. And I'm going to tell you what Bob Cooney's theory on the Glenn Robinson comments are. If you didn't hear yesterday in the morning show, Bob Cooney had some interesting thoughts on why Glenn Robinson, of all people, popped off to the media. And it was interesting. And this is a guy who, in Bob Cooney, who's been around the block, who was in the NBA locker rooms for years, who has dealt with situations like this. So if I'm going to take anyone's word for it when they start hypothesizing on why maybe somebody talked to the media, I'm going to go to a former media member in Bob Cooney, and that hypothesis holds water. So I'll tell you about that coming up shortly. Let's go to Chris in Williamstown, though. Chris, you are on the Fanatic.
You know, Pat, are you just ready for opening day and just, you know, to get this over with, move on to next season, and are you still invested in this season?
Right now I'm focused on the hockey season, which is, it's great to just have meaningful hockey back. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I got to be honest with you, Chris. The Philly season, it's okay. You know, I don't have any buzz for it. Mainly because, and I pray to God I'm wrong about this, I was not pumped about the Zach Wheeler signing. I don't think Zach Wheeler's very good. I think we're going to convince ourselves that Zach Wheeler's better than he is because we just gave him $100+ million contract. But when Brady Van Wagen, the GM of the Mets, comes out and says, "We helped that guy parlay two good second halves into $100+ million, I sit back and go, "Yeah, no, he's right." Like, they did. Because your big free agent acquisition, your quote-unquote, your new ace in Zach Wheeler, is not very good the first half and is good in the second half. And that, to me, is not worth the money. So the most excitement I have for the Phillies coming up is the fact that, and it's kind of funny because we're sitting here talking about Brett Brown, a lot like Gabe Kapler, they have a new voice, they have a new manager, they have a new pitching coach who knows what he's doing, they have a new hitting coach. So to me, I'm excited to see if the three pitchers that we were thinking were going to take the next step last year, being Eflin, Pivetta, and Velasquez, finally take a step this year with a real pitching coach. That's the excitement level to me. But other than that, Manny, I don't have a lot of buzz. I'm going to be honest with you.
Pat, don't do what the Phillies are doing and force feed me Velasquez, Pivetta, and
Eichel. Well, I mean, the reality is one of them is going to be the fifth starter.
I get it. You know, look, is it fair to say, and I know this is a long shot, and I hate to give this guy any due, but Markelle Fultz might have actually had a legit reason why he sat out, because he didn't want to call Brett Brown out and call him out.
No, I think Markelle Fultz. No, first of all, he's too young of a player. He didn't know any better.
Look what he's doing down in Orlando, though. I mean,
he's doing it down in Orlando because he has no media attention on him whatsoever. He's got 7.5 people coming to see him play every single night. He's got no pressure. And by the way, Markelle Fultz he's not an all-star. I mean, we're acting like Markelle Fultz is Jason Tatum, and he's playing well. But I think that when they traded Markelle Fultz last season, we all foresaw this coming. I mean, we all foresaw him eventually turning into a quality NBA player. He's still not playing like the number one overall pick. He's still not playing like the guy that we saw in Washington that we were, you know, over the moon about when they traded up to the number one pick, which is a move that I actually defend Brian Colangelo on. He's still not playing like that. He's playing better, but it's hard to play worse because of this quote-unquote, this, and I'll call it, it was a fake injury. It was an AAU coach who messed up a shot. And by the way, I still don't think the shot's all that fixed when I watch him play. So, yeah, he's playing better. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. He's not exactly an all-star.
I'll give you my person. Do you remember when it came down the pike that the Sixers landed Andrew Bynum?
Yeah.
Do you remember that waste of time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And like, thanks, Chris, I appreciate the phone call, man. The Andrew Bynum move, really, it sprung the process on because it was such a disaster. Doug Collins was fired after the season. Sam Hinkie comes in as the GM, and he blows the thing up. So for that, I will thank Andrew Bynum. The most amazing thing about Andrew Bynum is not the fact that he didn't play a season, and he literally sat out. He was a dog. He could have played. He didn't. And it got to the point where I remember sitting there going, this guy's never going to play. And it was early in the season that I thought this guy's never going to play. And he never did. But that's not the most amazing thing to me. The most amazing thing about Andrew Bynum is the fact that this guy got two more contracts from NBA teams to play basketball. Imagine that. You purposely sit out. You have no interest whatsoever of playing and working. And you're then able to springboard that. You're able to springboard that into another contract and a contract after that. God, I want that job security. But Andrew Bynum, I mean, I remember the press conference at the Constitution Center. The city was over the moon because you're coming off of a run that had them in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you get a guy who has all the talent in the world in Andrew Bynum and absolutely no interest whatsoever of doing anything, apparently doing anything except bowling. That was the only thing. So, and I know Josh Richardson gave the city quite a scare the other night when he tweeted out about his bowling stats, which congratulations to him. He hit a new all-time high. But I commented earlier in the show about how I kind of have a little PTSD when I see reevaluated and Sixers in the same sentence. And I know a lot of Sixers fans, when you see a Sixers player tweeting about bowling, it's the same thing because of Andrew Bynum. But no, that move did not work out at all, but it sprung board the process, and we're sitting here talking about it years later. So 610-632-0975. Let's go to Keith in Upper Darby. Keith, you're on the Fanatic.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for making the call.
Hey, man, I love the Sixers, man. I just want to put that out there. Let me ask you a question. Yes, another coach can win with the current roster, but so can Brett Brown. He's doing it. I mean, if we haven't been paying attention, he has a winning record. The season is not over, and he's doing it with two stars as opposed to four that we had last year.
Well, I mean, all right, let's break down the what you just said. He is winning. Do you think they have a shot at winning a championship?
No.
Then what's the point?
Last year either. I didn't either. I didn't think they had it last year either.
I mean, last year at least I disagree with you there. I do think they had a shot last year. I mean, they came one, you know, miracle shot in overtime away from getting the Eastern Conference Finals. You're right. Okay, when you look at the record, he is winning. But do you think that he has underachieved with this current lineup?
The current lineup, no, I thought they were going to be about 500. So, to be honest, I think he's over-exceeding expectations.
We have
two stars, man. Two stars.
Well, and the argument there, though, would be you replaced them with a quote-unquote, and I don't believe it, but a quote-unquote, a younger Jimmy Butler and Josh Richardson, and you replaced it with Al Horford, who was the friendly veteran. You know, and obviously Jimmy Butler wasn't the friendly veteran. He was the in-your-face vet. But you replaced him with Al Horford, who I like the move on many levels, one of them being obviously that Joel Embiid struggled against Al Horford in his career. I felt like working with him in practice would help Joel Embiid's game a lot. It hasn't. I feel like this is the same Joel Embiid that we saw last year. Al Horford, obviously, that signing has been a bust. But look, you're an outlier, though. You thought they were going to be a 500 team. They are.
And they're a little bit better. And, you know, they're exceeding my expectations. But I thought it was going to be a rough season simply because I thought we couldn't let J.J. or Jimmy go.
Yeah, I was surprised when J.J. left because the word on the street was that J.J. liked, obviously he liked his time in Philadelphia, but he liked the fact that he was close to his home in Brooklyn. He could travel there pretty frequently. Uh-huh. Then he goes to New Orleans. And I remember having a conversation with Anthony Gilbert, who writes, a great writer for NBA.com, about this during the offseason. And I said, what's up with that? He said, you look at the culture in New Orleans, and it's a lot of Duke guys. And Duke guys roll with other Duke guys.
Right.
Now, I know people out there are going, well, Pat, I mean, Elton Brand went to Duke. But when you look at the lineup that they're rolling out in New Orleans, it's a lot of it's very Duke heavy. And he chased the money, obviously. He wasn't willing to give him a discount. It was a huge blow, and it brings me to the question of it I posed earlier. If the game's on the line, I don't have confidence in anyone to hit a game-winning shot. Last year, I had confidence in Jimmy Butler. I had confidence in J.J. Redick because they were big game shooters.
Yeah.
But this team, no. But so you and Keith, you think that Brett Brown, they can win with him? Because I don't, man.
I do because I mean he's proven it. I mean, you know, he has to find a way to motivate them, obviously, on
the
road.
And that's a problem with me. Yeah,
that is a problem. But we don't have an argument to say that he can't do it because he's proven he's doing it.
Well,
but,
Keith, you know, look, man, I would love it if come June you're calling me up and I gotta admit that I was wrong. I honest to God, because I'm like you, man. I got Sixers season tickets. I'm a Sixers fan, and I would love to be wrong about. Adam, real quick, who is the player that you thought when they got in Philadelphia that they was going to get the team over the hump?
Oh, man, T.O. all day.
Yeah, we got Keith, thanks for the phone call, man. We got T.O. That was the first one we got, and my T.O. story was I was a freshman in high school, and I was in Spanish class. God, I hate Spanish class so much. And so I'm sitting there, and my teacher's going through numbers. I'm trying to teach us how to say all the numbers and stuff, and he writes 81 on the board. And he says, oh, the guy that we hope the Eagles will get today, because free agency just opened up in the NFL. And I laughed out loud and said, no shot. And a couple weeks later, I had to apologize in Spanish to him because they got T.O. It was a little shaky there for a while, though, because if you remember, the Baltimore Ravens traded for him first. They jumped in there, and they traded for him, and then there was a whole legality situation about him filing late for his free agency and opting out or whatever, but eventually it ended up working itself out. Brandon Whiting and a fifth-round pick for T.O. They also got another guy that offseason, too, which I thought both of them combined were going to get them over the hump, and it was a weird season because they had gone to the NFC Championship game three straight times, and every game felt like a coronation to the Super Bowl. You know, whereas the year they won the Super Bowl in 2017, it didn't feel like that to me because they were 7-9 the year before, and they're dummying teams. They're beating up on teams, but a lot of teams were bad. I was making excuses of why they were beating them. I didn't really know how good they were. And then obviously they went on that magical run with Nick Foles, and it was awesome, and it came out of the blue. And I think back on it, I'd rather have that than what we had in 2003, 2004 with that TO team where it was a foregone conclusion that you were going to the Super Bowl because, yeah, he was brought here to get them over the hump. And I feel like they would have won a Super Bowl had he stayed and had that worked himself out. Obviously, he admits his faults. Donovan does not admit anything that he did that he could have done differently, but it's a shame. But, man, T.O. was so special. I'll always be thankful for that guy, too, because we forget that guy had to sign a waiver to play for this city in the Super Bowl where he went out and caught something like 12 passes for 118 yards and, oh man, that was the first time that I can truly remember, because I'm a little bit younger, but the first time I can truly remember where we had an elite wide receiver in this city, because I was a little too young for the Harold Carmichaels and the Mike Quicks and even the Chris Carters. But man, that was such a special season to watch him do what he did. And yeah, that was the first name that came to mind. There's a lot of other ones though, but real quick, before we break, let's get to Will in South Philly. Will, you're on the Fanatic.
Hey, how you doing today?
What's up, Will?
I just wanted to comment on the Ben Simmons situation. I mean, he can't shoot a jumper, but I think he does so much more for the team that he's definitely worth keeping. I mean, because he's the best defensive player, most steals. I mean,
100%.
And when Embiid's not clogging up the lane, he'll go to a rack all day long.
100%. I mean, look, Will, this is the equivalent of like, you know, you got a girl, okay, and she cooks, and she's an unbelievable cook, okay, and She's great at conversation. She's great with kids. Great with your family, right? She does everything right. Everything. But she's not that great to look at. That's what Ben Simmons is with the jump shot. Ben Simmons does everything well. Very well, actually. He just, his jump shot isn't there. And the problem is, that's the first thing that a lot of people look at when it comes to point guards is their jump shots. And when I look at Ben Simmons, I go, yeah, that's great. And I understand that it's frustrating to me, too. But when you look at the positives, he's an elite defender. His court vision is second to none. You know, I mean, this is a guy who can get to the rim at ease. He doesn't do it as often as I'd like. But, you know, and he's developing his game. And you're seeing it slowly, which is frustrating because you want it a little bit faster. But he's upped his free throw percentage, which is a positive. It's just that jump shot. And that's it's frustrating. But you're right. I'm not moving Ben Simmons for anything just because he's such a special player that I do think eventually the jump shot will end up, you know, coming. But what's frustrating to a lot of fans, Will, is the fact that we were promised it this season at some point, and we still haven't gotten it.
Well, you know, nobody can promise that but him. You know, what I would like to see is people get on Embiid a little bit more, you know, because he needs to be down, you know, down in the paint a lot more instead of calling for the ball at the top of the rim.
Yeah.
And trying to dribble down and getting stripped and all kinds of crazy things. I mean, everybody has their place. You're 6'10", you need to be down low.
100%. And you know, I don't know if you've noticed this, Will, but I certainly have, just working here and talking to callers and hosts, that the Embiid love that we had, that we still have, it's there, but it's just not as much as it was in previous seasons, where he could literally, and Joel Embiid could do no wrong. Whereas now, yes, you're right. We're sitting here going, hold the phone. When you're down low, why are you losing so many balls? Why are you just shooting a bunch of threes when you should be down low on the block playing that bully ball that we thought we were going to get? So I'm with you. I mean, both players obviously need to work on elements of their game, but they're both very special players. And they're both very young, and you figure they will develop. Will, real quick, though, who is the guy that you thought was going to get them over the hump?
Well, you know, I went with Holiday. You know, somebody else had mentioned it while we were on hold, but Roy Halladay, man, I was ecstatic when we got him.
Yeah, and Will, thanks for the phone call, and that's coming off the 2009 season where they go back to the World Series, they lose to the Yankees, and then they go out and they bolster the rotation even more, getting Roy Halladay. I was watching press conferences, and I was dialed into every spring training game, and I can't stand spring training. I can't stand preseason anything, to be honest with you. If you're down in Clearwater, it's awesome because the weather's great. It's usually miserable here in Philly, and you know, you're in paradise. But in general, the game doesn't count, I don't care. I don't like it. But that season, could not wait to watch that guy throw a baseball in a Phillies uniform. And it really is a shame that they didn't get a championship while he was here, because that one season, his first season when he won the Cy Young, that was the best Phillies team I've ever seen. That was better than 2018. And the fact that they just ran into a hot Cardinals team drives me nuts, especially when you consider that, if you remember that season, we were laughing because the Braves ended up, it was something like the Braves screwed themselves over and they didn't end up getting the playoffs, and we were laughing and they got swept by the Cardinals or something, and we were laughing about it, and we were going to end up playing the Cardinals in the first round, and they end up losing, and the better matchup was the Braves, but obviously we were reveling in the fact that your NL East rival was going to miss the playoffs yet again. It would have been a better matchup, and I truly believe if they would have won, they would have won the World Series easily. And that season kind of reminded me of the season with the TO year with the Eagles, where every game was a coronation to a championship that wasn't. 610-632-0975. Can a new coach win with the roster as currently constructed with this Sixers team? Bryce Harper signed 1 year ago yesterday. Who is the one player that when he got to Philadelphia, you were convinced, okay, this is the guy that will get us over the hump? We've gotten T.O., we've gotten Andrew Bynum, we've gotten Roy Halladay. Give me another name. 515, Charlie O'Connor from The Athletic will pop on and talk about a little Flyers hockey with us. And then it's your phone call, 610-632-0975. It's Pat Egan with you until 6 o'clock on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, we're back. Let's get back to the phones really quick. Let's go to Doug in Pensauken. Doug, you're on The Fanatic. What's up, Doug?
Hey, so I think the most frustrating for the Sixers season this year is that reality is setting in. And after being told a bill of goods, just blow it up and trust the process. When it turned into, you know, 3, 4, 5 years of tanking and just terrible season to terrible season, and it now culminates in this. We have a star player that refuses to make a 3-point shot, and we have another one that's constantly injured. And the frustrating thing is that reality is now starting to set in, and the fan base, I can see it now, is starting to turn on them. And they're winning at home now, yes, but they start losing at home now too, it's going to get real ugly real fast. And
yeah. And no one's going to, if they start losing at home, no one's going to go, well, hold the phone, they don't have Embiid and Simmons.
Yeah, well, that's beside the point. We were told that, you know, this works, that we're supposed to be on our run. This was going in the right direction. But now, we're in a situation now where, like, maybe if this doesn't work out in the next 3 or 4 years, we got to blow it up again. So then what?
You're right. And that was the problem with the process, in that you needed to win a championship. It was literally championship or bust. You were doing this whole thing to win a championship. Now, the organization isn't going to put themselves on him. They're not going to come out and say this is championship or bust, but we knew what they were doing. They weren't doing this to get the 2 or 3 seed, you know, go to the Eastern Conference Finals and lose. That wasn't the whole process, and that wasn't the whole point of it. The whole point of it was to win a ring in Philly, and you're looking at it, this isn't what we sacrificed 4 years for. It wasn't to finish the 5 seed and probably play a matchup that I don't know a lot of Sixers fans think that they can win. And even if they do win that first round matchup, whoever they play, can they win a second round matchup? Probably not.
Exactly. That's how it all started. We got in 2011 against the Celtics. That's how it started then. We're right back to square one. And I think the team itself, the organization, has this blind loyalty to Brett Brown just because he sat through losing seasons. And yeah, Grant, you sat through those losing seasons. Good for you, kudos. But you know what? You were given the tools last year. You couldn't get it done, and now you have a situation where your team's kind of not falling apart per se, but like it's not performing as high as it should be. And you are the head coach.
And that's that's my problem, is the fact that we always sat here and said, okay, let's see what happens when he finally has players, and he gets players, and he struggles. And we back up the goalposts and we say, oh, okay, well, he struggled, but they didn't play together for all that long. Okay, fine. You back up the goalposts. Well, they switched and they did a facelift again and they got new players. And it's like we keep making excuses for the guy because he is likable. But take all that likability aside. Take the fact that he'll talk to the media. Take the fact that he gives you a good quote. Take all the fact that, you know, he did sit through the process and he had to deal with guys like Adonis Thomas and Lupa Amute and Isaiah Cannon. Ignore all of that. If you have his record and, like, let's say Chip Kelly's same situation, what's the difference? I mean, we wanted Chip Kelly out because he was a jerk and he wasn't winning. And
right.
Brett Brown, he's likable, so we want him to win, but he's not winning.
Well, here's what I ask people, like, if the Eagles did this, okay, 7 straight years of, I know football's a totally different sport, but just hear me out. If they did 5 straight years of losing to try to get a good quarterback down the road, I mean, would we put up with this? Of course not.
No, probably not. Real quick, Doug, what's your player that you thought was going to get him over the hump?
Chris Pronger. If he just wore a face shield, and there's no doubt in my mind the Flyers have a ceiling up right now in their back pocket.
Yeah, and I mean, he was such a dominant defenseman. And I mean, now it's mandatory that if you come to the NHL, you have to wear a shield. It was grandfathered in that if you weren't wearing any shield whatsoever, you didn't have to. But the concussions really took it ended his career. It's unfortunate, but it ended his career. But he was that huge defenseman that really just solidified the blue line in so many ways. And they gave up like nothing. nothing in that trade, too. It was great. They gave up Lucas Spezza, draft picks. But yeah, that one I know a lot of Flyers fans a lot of Flyers fans were jacked about Chris Pronger. So that's a really good one. We got another Flyers one on Twitter, and you can tweet the show at @Pat_Egan if you want. I'm getting a lot of good ones on Twitter, but I want to give you guys out there a chance to call me up and tell me yours. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Nick in Jersey. Nick, you're on the Fanatic.
How's it going, brother?
What's up, Nick?
Hey, I called to talk basketball, but if it's okay, I wanted to start with my most memorable trade.
Sure, absolutely. Signing.
It was T.O. T.O. was the most memorable signing.
Yeah, that's the most popular one right now. I'm getting a lot of T.O.
And that's what frustrates me about Philly football is that, you know, we've had some great quarterbacks, in my opinion. And we always go shopping at Walmart for wide receivers.
Yep.
You know, but sometimes you got to go to Macy's.
No, you're right, and you're seeing just like how Andy tried to address the wide receiver position through the draft. Todd Pinkston was a second round pick. Freddie Mitchell was a first round pick. He failed at it. He failed, and
at least he tried.
And I can't help but sit here and go, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, second round pick. He can't play. You pray to God that they go out and they address the wide receiver position in the first round this year, but they hit. Because if you don't hit, and you know, that's 2 years in a row that you missed on the second and first round pick at a position that you desperately need because of the fact that you have a special quarterback in Carson Wentz. And to your point, Nick, you had a special quarterback in Donovan McNabb, and you surrounded him with garbage.
Garbage. You know, the only difference between Patrick Mahomes and Carson Wentz, to me, is in general, is that Patrick Mahomes has somebody to throw the ball to. If we watch if we look at last season, our record, we should have had more wins. And it wasn't on Carson's fault because there were game-winning passes that were dropped.
You're right. You look at the Atlanta game, Nelson Aguilar, quote-unquote, loses it in the lights. The Detroit game, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, I mean, come on, man. I could have caught that ball, and all he has to do is fall backwards. So you're right. You look at these games, and there's a few other ones in there where they're not on Carson. And last season was a real up and down, frustrating season. But you hope that Howie's able to not only go out and address the position, because he did that last season, he just failed at it, but get the right guy in here, because they haven't had great luck at drafting wide receivers. They've hit on some guys here and there. Jeremy Maclin had a nice career here, and obviously DeSean Jackson was phenomenal. But they really got to hit. If they're going to address in the first round, they have to hit on it.
My question for you is, and this is with basketball, the underachieving of players, when the players in general across the board are underachieving, does that fall on coaching, or does it fall on the player? Joel Embiid,
mm-hmm.
You know, I love this team, honestly. I do. I got really excited when we brought in Al Horford, which is unusual for us because, you know, I heard people wanting, you know, D Rose is a great player, but he's done now. I don't want him.
I would take D Rose off the bench. I would take him. And Nick, thanks for the phone call, because I'm up against it. To answer your question, though, a little bit of both. All right. I mean, the players have to hold themselves accountable 100%. And maybe it's a maturity thing with Ben and Joe. But it's amazing to me that Josh Richardson comes in here, and we've had Keith Pompey on the air many times. To me, he's the best beat writer in the city in terms of Sixers basketball. And we've had him on, and we've asked him the question, who's the leader of this team? You're expecting him to say Ben. You're expecting him to say Joe. Maybe even Tobias Harris, maybe Al Horford, because they're paid a lot of money. He goes, Josh Richardson. And to me, that is shocking. So yes, it is on the players to hold themselves accountable. But it's also on coaching to put themselves in a good position. And one of the glaring things that I have with it, with Brett Brown and the coaching, and one of the reasons why I'm not so much blaming the players as much as I probably should, but I'm more so blaming the coach, is because you look at what happened to Al Horford. Al Horford was a phenomenal player in Boston. He comes here, and all of a sudden he thinks he's Peja Stojakovic. I have a problem with that, and that's coaching. 610-632-0975. John, Keith, Stephen, Ron, and Rob. Sit tight, then it's you guys. It's Patty with you until 6 o'clock on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Right, we're back. Got to tell you guys that this weekend's programming is brought to you by Turnersville Jeep. Save big on brand new Jeeps and Ram trucks during the President's Day sales event going on now at TurnersvilleJeep.com on Route 42 in Turnersville, New Jersey. Drive a little, save a lot. So we've talked a lot about Brett Brown and can a new coach win with this current roster construction. We mixed a little flyers in there. Programming alert. I said earlier Charlie would join us. Charlie O'Connor, the Flyers beat writer for The Athletic, will join us at 5:15. He'll actually join us at 5:45, so if you're looking forward to that interview, it'll happen at 5:45. Just gotta wait a little bit longer. But we'll continue the Sixers talk, and I want to give you guys a Twitter poll update. You can find the Twitter poll on Twitter at Pat_Egan. And the question was, and it's really been the question all day, looking at this current roster construction, can another coach fix the Sixers' issues, or is the team, as currently constructed, simply not good enough to win a championship? 62% say another coach can win with this team. I tend to agree with them. Whereas 38% say, no, they're lost cause because of how this roster is constructed by Elton Brand. And Elton Brand went out and did a bold move in the offseason. He let Jimmy Butler go. That's the first bold move he did. But to allocate the money to Al Horford and sign Tobias Harris to a max-level contract, when I think, let's be real here, I mean, nobody thinks he's actually a max-level guy. He's getting paid that money, but come on. Very nice player, don't get me wrong, but max-level, eh. But that's a bold move that I was excited about. I was excited about the direction of the Sixers. I was excited about this facelift, and it's been a disaster. On the flip side, you look at the other team that plays in Wells Fargo Center, the Flyers, they are absolutely thriving right now. I mean, one of the best teams in hockey. They're second in the Metro, and you're seeing what a change in coaching and the effect that it can have on a team. Because, yeah, the Flyers went out and they got Kevin Hayes and they got Matt Niskanen and they got Justin Braun. They made some moves, and I'm sure the Sixers will make some moves to solidify their bench in the offseason. And those moves certainly helped. But you're seeing the effect on what coaching can have on a team, especially when you have a team where you don't know how good the coach is. And Flyers fans had no idea how good their coach was last season in Dave Hakstol. They had no idea. This guy came from North Dakota. All right, he was a college coach. You could convince yourself he wasn't that bad, but you didn't really know. Brett Brown's the same way. He comes off Popovich's bench, and you don't know. You go, okay, well, he had one good playoff run here, but they struggle here. And 6 years later, we still, at the very best, we still don't know if he can coach. I don't think he can. I don't think he's a guy. I think he's the guy that gets you to the guy. But the important thing is that whoever's next has to win with this current roster, because this roster isn't changing. This starting five that you see, and I know Al Horford's coming off the bench now, but the starting five of Josh Richardson, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, that starting five, and I'm expecting Al Horford to go back in the starting five for a new coach, is going to be your starting five next season, because Elton Brand isn't going to give up on the team that he constructed less than a year ago. So whoever comes in here, you're going to be tasked to win with them. Being tasked to win with that team and winning with them is two different things. So can that new guy do it? I think he can, but what about you out there? And then 1 year ago, yesterday, Bryce Harper signed with the Phillies. It didn't work out in year one, but it's, don't worry, we got 12 years to go. But what was the one move in Philadelphia? Trade, free agent signing, where when it was made, you went, this is the move to get us over the hump. I'll tell you right now, T.O. has been the most popular one. We've gotten a lot of T.O. Roy Holiday's been number two. We've gotten Andrew Bynum. We've gotten Chris Pronger. So give me another one, but what's the one move where you went, oh, yeah, we're winning a championship? A lot of times, by the way, it didn't pan out. But there's a lot of names out there that I could throw out. Let's go to John in South Philly. John, you're on the Fanatic.
Pat, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
What's up, man? Thanks for making the call.
No, thanks for taking it. I have to tell you, Pat, I told your producer, a lot of times when I listen to you, I get aggravated with you.
I'm sorry.
I still love you.
Yeah, well, my wife's the same way. I mean, she just, every time I open my mouth, she hates me.
But you're compelling, and every time you're on, I got to listen to you. So
I appreciate
it. So put that aside. Today, man, what made me call, I'm driving around, and what you, the analogy you made with Simmons and the girl was so spot on that I was like, I have to call this dude. Like, the fact that you said he's a girl that you're dating with every aspect, but she's not that nice to look at, that is so dead on accurate.
And if you're a girl out there, by the way, just flip it. I mean, because I am that guy. I've got the whole package, you know?
So am I.
But I just, my face, it's a face for radio. It's not much to look at, so.
So am I. Yeah. I thank my wife every day.
Me too.
Yeah. But, you know, and with that said, just to touch on the Sixers, man, like, you know, I know there's a million people saying, you know, the problem is both of them or it's one or the other. I don't think it's either of them. I really think it comes down to Brett Brown. I think it comes down to his style of coaching. And I don't think you can get rid of either one unless you really go out there, get a coach, you know, a different coach,
yeah,
and see if that makes a difference. And I know that's like so generic or simple of an answer, but I really think, like, if you look at the Flyers as an example, different team, I get it. But they bring in, you know, Alain Vigneault, and it's a whole different, we're talking, you know, they're going to the playoffs.
Yeah, and you look at Alain Vigneault, and I was talking about this yesterday with Jamie on the Fanatic at 5, but he's a veteran coach, obviously. He's gone to Stanley Cups with both Vancouver and New York. New York in his first season with the Rangers, he went to the Stanley Cup. But what he's able to do is he's a player's coach. The players love to play for him, but he's not scared to call them out in the media as well. And one of the reasons why, and I believe it was the morning show who had Travis Konecny on, he said this. If he goes out, if Alain Vigneault goes out to the media and says, I need more out of Jake Voracek, which he did. He said, I like Jake Voracek, the guy. I need more out of Jake Voracek, the player. It's always something he's told us to our face. We're not taken off guard by that. And I can't help but think that when Brett Brown went out in the media and said, tell whoever is talking to Ben Simmons, I want a three-pointer a game and 8 foul shots and blah, blah, I mean, maybe Ben Simmons knew it was common, but my guess is probably not. My guess is probably Brett Brown just said it because he likes to say things in the media. He likes to elaborate on things, and that's one of the reasons why the media loves Brett Brown. He talks and expands on points and stuff. But to your point, I'm with you, man. I'm not moving either of these guys until I hear a new voice, because this is the only coach these two have ever known. And
nobody's... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Nobody's ever won a championship because they were liked. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think I'm a likable dude, but that doesn't mean that I'm good at my job.
Like, no, you're right. You're right.
We're separate.
And John, I really appreciate the phone call and the kind words. No, we all know guys in our fields, whatever the field is, that's a jerk, but he's really good at his job. And you're right. And I think one of the reasons we give Brett Brown a pass, and that pass, by the way, is gone as... it's non-existent at this point. I hit a point in my Brett Brown tenure back in December where I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't. We need a new coach. And people have joined on that bandwagon. Some people were driving the bandwagon before me. But he's likable. You know, he says all the right things. His interviews are great. And you go, oh, I want this guy to succeed. I honest to God, I understand it. You know, he's not Chip Kelly. He's not a jerk. But he's also, in my opinion, not that good of a coach. And he's certainly lost the locker room. Mark Farzetta on the morning show brings this up all the time. He says there's a game in Miami where he's yelling at Matisse Thybulle, a rookie. Matisse is tuning him out. Because probably Matisse is sitting there listening to the veterans on the team and what the veterans are telling him to do, and not the head coach. That's a problem. So whether you're a Brett Brown guy or not, It's hard to not admit that he has lost this team, because they're just not really listening to them. They're popping off in the media. They're saying and they're questioning things about the leadership in the locker room. And you're seeing just the fragmented things about the Sixers team come out and about Brett Brown's culture in that room. Everything smiles and great when they're ringing the bell and they win, but when they lose, it's telling. And that's my issue. 610-632-0975. We have 25 minutes commercial free coming up next. So Keith, Steven, Ron, and Rob, just sit tight. I'll get to all of you guys coming up in 25 minutes. I do want to tell you guys what Bob Cooney and his hypothesis about why Glenn Robinson, of all people, came out to the media and said what he said. And I'll read the quotes off. Coming up next, we've got 25 minutes commercial free. It's Pat Egan with you until 6 o'clock on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.